If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, good evening. Welcome. I'm Carol Gold, and we hope you're calling into the show today. The number is 914-803-4522. I'm here on my own tonight. Steve was unavailable for the show, so you're going to get to hear, you're going to get to hear all of my perspectives on what has happened recently with the Supreme Court and the Obergefell, I'm not sure how the pronunciation is, versus Hodges, the case that on Friday brought down the decision that gay marriage is now the law of the land, meaning that it is legal and mandatory in all 50 states. So I have a bunch of concerns about this case, none of which have anything to do with being gay, actually. As a lawyer, which I am, my concern, first and foremost, is more about the rule of law, the Constitution, and the separation of powers between the three branches of government, the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. It is, in fact, the role of the judiciary to decide law, not to make law. And in many ways, in the two decisions that have come down in the last few days, the two, one being the Obamacare decision, and the second being the Hodges decision, or the Obergefell versus Hodge decision on gay rights, in both cases, in my opinion, and the opinion of others, the Supreme Court wrote law or made law that didn't exist, found law that didn't exist. In the Obamacare case, which I'm not going to belabor because I want to make some social commentary points about the gay rights case. In the Obamacare case, the court took the word state, which referred to the state-originated exchanges, the state healthcare exchanges that were specifically referenced in the Obamacare law, saying that if you bought your insurance through a state-created exchange, you were entitled to a subsidy, but not if you bought it through the federal exchange. The court decided that the word state actually meant federal, which is a stretch of not only the English language, but of the imagination as well. And so, in essence, they wrote new law because the Obamacare law never said that, but they did that for the sole purpose of sustaining the legality and the validity of Obamacare. I think they went well beyond the Constitution, as was noted by the very strong dissenting opinions that were written in that case. But let's move on to the gay rights case, because the gay marriage case, because I think that case presents similar but different problems, and perhaps bodes ill for potential future problems. And here's what I mean. There is no right to marry in the Constitution. The Constitution doesn't provide a right to marry. The Constitution provides a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It also provides the right to religious freedom. And most people marry within the confines of their religion. That doesn't mean there aren't people who don't have religious weddings. There are. There are people who have civil ceremonies. And the state does have an interest in maintaining certain parameters and procedures around marriage for the sole purpose of keeping an orderly society. But the questions, plural, that probably come up are, one, should the state even be in the business of marriage? Why do they have any say in the business of marriage? And two, if you redefine marriage as no longer being between a man and a woman, which in essence is what the Supreme Court decision did, if two men can marry, and they can, and two women can marry, and they can now, then you've taken the definition of marriage and you've changed it from being simply between a man and a woman to being between some other configuration. And if one configuration is a valid configuration, then so might other configurations sue under the same umbrella of rationale. Meaning, if two men and a woman want to marry, or three men want to marry, or three women and a man want to marry, I can see them bringing suit, because once the definition of marriage no longer means a specifically defined man and woman union in terms of gender, then you open the door to an equal protection argument where one could argue, if you're discriminating against me because I'm a man and I love another man and we both love a third woman and he and I want to marry and then we want to marry her to both of us, I think you come in on really strong ground if your argument is, well, two men can marry, so why can't two men and a woman marry? Problem number one. Problem number two is, and this is the problem most frequently discussed, and it is that if you want to marry someone of the same gender and you want it done in a church or a synagogue or a mosque, and that church or synagogue or mosque denies you that opportunity because the basis for the denial is that it flies in the face of the tenets or the fundamental beliefs of the religion, and therefore would cause the marrying officiate to violate their own freedom of religion and the way in which they practice their religion, we can all see lawsuits down the road, and in fact, one was filed in Great Britain. Now, admittedly, it has nothing to do with our law, but it's the handwriting on the wall. Two gay men, for the article that I read, said they are millionaires, have filed suit against a church in England for refusing to marry them. And so now we run up against the problem of freedom of religion, freedom to practice one's religion, freedom to honor one's religion, which is a fundamental freedom of this country, which, by the way, is probably the single most, probably the single most pressing reason that this nation was founded, on the principle that people were entitled to practice their own religion and were not to be forced by the king or anyone else to abide by a state-sanctioned belief system. So now we're challenging a fundamental bedrock, foundational principle on which the United States was founded. We commonly refer to these as the Judeo-Christian principles, and it has become chic and politically correct to mock people who believe in Judeo-Christian principles. And when I look back in history and I look at cultures and leaders who tried to, or did effectively, eliminate Judeo-Christian practice, they all wind up as dictatorships or failed societies. And so we here in the United States, in our infancy, we're less than 300 years old, we in our infancy have to be very careful that we realize and recognize and honor that we are an experiment. We are an experiment in human history. And nowhere is it written that this experiment has to prevail. So we need to be very protective of and circumspect about challenges to fundamental freedoms as they were set forth by the founders. The other thing that I find very disturbing in the fallout and the aftermath of the decision is the vitriol, is the hate speech. Admittedly, on both sides, I have looked at websites where I have seen very crude and nasty comments toward gay marriage, and I have also read an equal number, if not greater number, of equally nasty and vitriolic comments that are coming out of a ha-ha-ha, we got you, we won, you're finished, you know, we're gay and we made it and we're now officially the law of the land and onwards and upwards, for a kind of rub your nose in it mentality. Now, I want to say something about that. And what I want to say is, I do not believe the majority of gay people have that attitude or that perspective or ever had that goal. I don't believe they ever had a goal to have any other political agenda other than trying to legalize their unions. Now that that has been accomplished, I believe that most gay people are satisfied. Now, I'm not gay, so I'm talking, it's like me talking about what I think about the black community. I can only give you an outsider's perspective and an outsider's guess, and that's what I'm doing. I think that most gay people are happy and satisfied and proud that they can now publicly, not only publicly wear their love, but have their love state sanctioned. Their relationship, they didn't need their love state sanctioned. They could have their relationship state sanctioned so that in the case of the plaintiff who brought the case that eventually got to the Supreme Court, he was seeking to be named as the surviving spouse on the death benefits of his partner. And of course, that was impossible because he wasn't legally the surviving spouse, because he wasn't legally married in the state in which he resided. And so there's a real valid and genuine joy that should now be afforded gay people who no longer have to deal with those kind of inequities and those kinds of financial hardship that such decisions would render. However, I don't think it's the majority of gay people that have the hate and the vitriol, that are wearing FU and tattoos on their backs in the gay pride parade, or sucking on dildos as they're walking down Times Square in the gay pride parade. I don't believe that those are the gay people who scream the loudest, make the most noise, and are the most public. I believe that the gay people who do all of those latter things that I just named are part of the political left, regardless of their sexuality, and that their agenda of shoving their gayness into everyone's face who isn't gay and who doesn't want to champion their choices of being living in gay relationships, I think their overall agenda is the collapse of the political system in the United States, and that gay rights is only one of many factors in that march to bring down the United States government, to bring down this country as we know it. I think that the left, the same way that people accuse the Republicans, of which I am not one, but in the same way that people accuse the Republicans of being fundamentalist, right-wing, gun-carrying, Bible-toting kooks, I think that, and there is an element of that in the Republican Party, I think there is an element of that, of something similar in the Democratic Party, and that is a rabid brand of socialism. And the same way that the left is so consistently arguing that the Republican Party has been hijacked by that 10% or whatever it is, extreme right wing, I think it's fair to say that the Democrat Party has been hijacked by their 10% left fringe wing. And those are communists and socialists and progressives. And the reason I say hijacked is because Hillary Clinton, by her own words in the 2008 presidential election, defined herself as a modern-day 20th century progressive or 21st century progressive. That has very specific meaning. Progressivism means something. And ironically, her current nemesis and challenger on her heels in single digits in New Hampshire and I think Iowa as well is Bernie Sanders, who is a self-declared socialist. There's nothing suspect about it. He's a self-declared proud socialist. And so I think the Democratic Party and those gay people who align themselves with the extreme left of the Democratic Party, who I'm sure that if we could talk to individually, they would call the show, would not only be gay, they would be progressive. And they would have lots of other complaints about the United States in its past and present form. I, too, have problems with the United States in its past and present form. But I am constantly aware of this saying, let's be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And where does that expression come from? It comes from the fact that whenever we're thinking about change, whenever we're thinking about radical change and rapid change, it's so easy to jettison everything without stopping to think and realize that there's always good in everything, as well as aspects that need updating, evolution, positive change, whatever you want to call them. And so the expression, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, is in your haste to get rid of the dirty water, you can also throw out the baby, which is not what you want to do. We have had problems in this country since its inception. Every system has problems. Every system has challenges. As I said, we're babies. If you stand in the heart of Rome, Italy, there are literally buildings around you, including the columns to the original Senate where Brutus killed Caesar, still standing. The pillars are actually still standing. There's 2,000 years of history in Rome, and they've had 2,000 years to evolve their culture. We've had less than 300. So in a very short period of time, we not only took 13 disparate states or colonies with 13 disparate perspectives on how to live together, and we not only united them, we matured them and we enlarged them into 50, or 57, I think, if you're Barack Obama, but into 50 entities, that 50 individual states that operate in unison and in harmony for the most part. And in that same short period of time, the infancy of the United States of America, we had slaves, we sanctioned slavery, and we abolished slavery. If we still have some racism left over, well, okay. Not okay that we still have racists. Okay that we're moving in the right direction, that we got rid of something heinous. And yes, it takes time to change hearts. In fact, the smarter thing to have done was not to have the United States Supreme Court with five unelected lawyers shove down the nation's throat gay marriage. We had 32 or 36 states that had already legalized gay marriage. And inevitably, so would, if I'm right that there were 36, inevitably, so would the other 14 most likely, because the nation was changing. Hearts are changing. And if you allow it to happen in a natural process, instead of ramming it down someone's throat, it would happen with a true reconciliation and a true commitment to oneness. Instead, all the Supreme Court has done is fire up the flames of opposition and dissension and fear, by the way, around what it really means and where it's really headed and what comes next. And is gay marriage really enough for those activists who were seeking it, or are there a whole bunch of other issues on the agenda that are part of a larger scheme? And I argue there are. There are, and it goes back to Woodrow Wilson and progressivism in this country, and Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, who was a eugenicist and created Planned Parenthood, founded it for the purpose of weeding out undesirables, including the black race. And now, who is more responsible for deaths of black babies than Planned Parenthood? I heard a statistic not too long ago that the black population would be 26% higher than it is today were it not for the amount of abortions performed by Planned Parenthood. So, and by the way, The KKK was the enforcement wing of the Democrat Party, not the Republican Party. And it was the Democrat Party that opposed the abolition of laws that were oppressive to blacks. And it was Lyndon Johnson who fought segregation and fought integration of the schools in the South. So when we live under all these fictions of who the good guys are and who the bad guys are and who today should be politically correct and who today should be politically stoned, we have to be careful to pay attention, you know, to what George Orwell said in his book 1984. And I'm going to paraphrase now because I don't quite remember the wording. But in essence, Orwell said that to control a people, you just control their history. You tell them you tell them a different story about what happened before, and that changes how they see what is now. And so that's what's been done. We have a false narrative taught as part of our history, a selective narrative, because it fits an agenda that is that was put in place and continues to be put in place by a progressive agenda. Progressives are the people who write the textbooks. They are the professors in almost all the universities, except the Christian ones, ironically, in this country, which is very sad, because I'm a Jew with a Jewish daughter, but if I want her to get a college education that isn't completely twisted and crippled by progressive policies and agenda and progressive perspective, I'd have to send her to a Christian college. We are brainwashed. We are led like sheep. We are manipulated. We are lazy. We don't want to do our homework and look deep and look beyond. And so we also take sitting down abolition of the Constitution. You know, when Hitler came to power in Germany, the first thing he did was abolish the Constitution and take away the guns and take all the pictures of Christ out of the churches and put up pictures of himself. There is a reason why dictators and people who seek power for the sake of power always do the same three things initially. They abolish the law as it's been, they disarm the population, and they close down the religious institutions. Be very careful, America. Be very, very careful. While there may be some merit to gun control, to sane laws that prevent irresponsible minors or people with mental illness from owning a weapon, that's a far cry from abolishing a private citizen's right under the Constitution to own a weapon. Be very careful, America, that a Supreme Court decision that potentially opens the door to shut down churches or synagogues or mosques, take away their charitable status with the IRS, and imprison or fine their leaders, their ministers, their priests, their rabbis, because they refuse to marry a couple that, based on their belief system within their own religion, violates the word of God. And be very careful, America, of policies that mock all that has always been. We are not a bad country. We are not a bad people. We are a country that has been the first to respond to the suffering and the pains of the rest of the world. We are the most charitable nation on earth privately. It has nothing to do with government dispensed taxpayer money. We are the most charitable nation as individuals on the planet. We are oftentimes the first, or one of the first, actually, along with Israel, to be at the sites of disaster no matter where they are in the world and to offer whatever help we can. We have sometimes taken longer than others would like, but we inevitably the right course, no evil when we see it, and stand and are willing to do something about it. At least that's who we have been. I don't know who we are. I truly don't know who we are. So much has changed in the past 3 years. So many things that we held dear have been mocked and abolished and regulated into oblivion. So much of how we saw the world, how we treated our friends, how we held our enemies at bay, has broken down and in some cases turned themselves upside down so that now the reverse is true and our enemies are treated with greater dignity than our friends. Be careful, America. We are not a shoe-in. We are not a guarantee. Nowhere is it written that we must survive or that this nation continues to hold an honored place in the evolution of humanity and in the evolution of the freedom of humankind, the freedom to worship, the freedom to speak, the freedom to achieve the most you can achieve on your own efforts with very little to stand in your way, regardless of your color or your gender. There may be some roads that are tougher than others, but in America, all roads are truly open. For some, it still takes more energy. I grant you that. And for some, there are more obstacles. I will grant you that. And there are inequities. But it's a far cry from being thrown off a roof in Mosul to being able to walk down the street almost naked in Times Square. In both cases, just trying to live your sexual preference. We have lost sight of our freedoms. We have lost sight of the value of where we were born and when we were born. And if we don't wake up soon and stand for what it is we are blessed with, it will be gone in a heartbeat. And it will be a very long time, if ever, before future generations get to see anything remotely resembling what today we now take for granted that we call the United States of America. Thanks for listening to the show tonight. Steve will be back here again Thursday evening. I'm Carol Gold. You can also listen to me tomorrow night on Blog Talk Radio. My other show is called Inspirational Gold, and on that show I do news from a spiritual perspective. So join me tomorrow night on Inspirational Gold at 6:30, and again here Thursday evening, 6 p.m. with Steve Clark. Thanks for listening. Everybody, have a wonderful week. Stay aware, stay awake, stay alert, and stand proud. I'm Carol Gold. You've been listening to Above the Fray podcast. Bye-bye.
90 seconds.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.